Everybody, and welcome to the show. Happy Monday. I hope you all had a fantastic weekend. I know I did. Today we're going to be talking about several stories. One revolving around Taylor Swift, who's just released a new album, which apparently has lyrics that people are offended by. And we will get into those lyrics, do a little bit of lyric breakdown and analysis on this show today. We're also going to be talking about the YouTube channel Watcher that tried to give an announcement where they said, you know what, our Watcher material is going to be going behind a pay. Paywall. It's going to be $6 a month. Their fans did not take too kindly to that announcement. We might talk a little bit about Pearl Davis, who's recently going viral on TikTok, and we'll talk about why. Plus, is Ozempic face taking over Hollywood? You know, I'm no stranger to talking about Ozempic on this channel, so we will get into that. But before all these different stories, we have Taylor in Nashville. He is back.
Hey, I'm back. Free Taylor. I saw someone in the chat say, yes, the other less interesting Taylor. And I'm just going to tell myself that they mean she's less interesting Taylor and hope that they were not referring to me, but I digress.
They were totally talking about the one and only Taylor Swift. Y'all going to have to let me know, are there any Swifties among us right now? Because I'm sure you're going to have a lot of hot takes in the comments down below. I feel like this is a you love her or you hate her type of situation. I will say I'm very indifferent towards Taylor Swift. Her music was banging back in the day when she was first getting out there. I'm not so much of a fan of her music now. I did go ahead and listen to the entirety of this new album, The Tortured Poets Department, the anthology, which I felt like came out a little bit too swiftly. Wow, pun intended. I sound like Taylor on today's show. 31 songs over 2 hours long, this album. If I'm going to give my take on it, I will say it felt redundant. You know, a lot of the songs really felt very similar. Everything was very wordy. From the outside perspective of not being a Swiftie and listening to this album, it felt like more of a gift towards people who are really deeply into Taylor Swift. And I saw somebody sort of sum up this album as being extremely self-referential and rhymey. and that's what I take from it. I felt like if you are really into Taylor Swift and her lore and her personal life and all the sort of deep cut self-referential stuff she puts in this album, then maybe this was for you. But for me, the album really sounded like every song sounded very similar. It was very rhymey. Lots of very specific references that if you have no idea like what she's talking about, you just have no idea what she's talking about. Many, many attempts, felt like every single line was an attempt to be clever and to sort of put a spin on something and throw in all the proper nouns and specific references. It didn't hit for me, I'm gonna be honest. And I don't say this as somebody who dislikes Taylor Swift. I like a lot of her stuff, so don't come for me.
She's kind of an empire to herself at this point. I haven't even listened to the album, but do you think it could be maybe like the Christopher Nolan effect where you get so big and so popular and no one can tell you no anymore and you just have total freedom to do whatever you want, and people who might know a thing or two about filmmaking that could kind of rein you in on some of your excesses, or in Taylor's case, rein you in on too much self-referential material. They don't get to say that anymore. So now you just get stuff that is all super deep Taylor Swift, whatever the hell she wants to do. I feel like that might be playing into it a little bit. That's just because she's so big that no one can tell her no.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, if you've built an empire, it like makes sense that it starts to sort of feed into itself a little bit. And at some point you can choose to make artistry that is like for the populace and tries to like transcend and become like a classic timeless thing. Or you can start making things that are for the people who enjoy you and who are like deep fans of you and your personal life and give all these references to what's going on. The amount of like Swifties that I saw listening to the album and they'd hear a very specific line and know exactly which man she's referencing and why and where they met and on what date. I'm like, okay, you have to be deep set in this young woman's lore to know exactly what she's referencing.
It sounds like Marvel people at that point.
Yes, exactly. Like there's little Easter eggs planted everywhere, which I think is kind of cool in itself that she's built based on her talent enough of a background and enough interest in her personal life that she gets to do that. So yeah, she's catching heat though all over the internet because of a line in a song on the album titled I Hate It Here, which is about her relationship with the place that she's in her life, based on my judgment of the lyric, and saying, you know, I sort of hate it here. I hate the way society and the world is currently. So I go into the recesses of my mind to sort of think about things and to be with myself. And she writes about longing for another time and games that she used to play when she was a young girl with her other friends, where they shouted out decades that they would love to live in. And she talks about how nostalgia is really a trick, and you can fall for this idea of nostalgia and longing for the past, but oftentimes if you were actually living in that time period, you would hate it too. But people have decided to focus on two specific lyrics in the song, which we will read here. The lyrics are here. It says, My friends used to play a game where we would pick a decade we wish we could live in instead of this. I'd say the 1830s, but without all the racists and getting married off for the highest bid. So she's saying, okay, we were talking about decades. I picked the 1830s, except probably don't want to deal with all the racism of the time period and don't want to get married off for the highest bid. I don't want to be treated like property, as often women were during the 1930s. People were pissed at this lyric. How dare you, a white woman, say that you would want to live in the 1830s? Do you know what was happening in the 1830s? You're talking about peak slavery in the United States. How disgusting that you would long for a time where such racism and crimes against humanity exists, even though she references directly after saying it, without all the racists and getting married off for the highest bid. And we've all done this before, I think. Every single generation sort of plays this game with itself, where we throw out decades that we would have rather been in. How many times do you hear people say they long for the early 2000s or the late 90s, where culture was sort of in a golden era and entertainment was really great and style was cool and people were having fun and having great conversations? You can point to any prior decade and say, there's a nostalgia factor there, or there's something that I long for, or there's something that I feel like I missed out on, while not wanting to accept the more heinous, egregious tendencies of that decade. Do we get what we're saying here? You know, if I go and watch the movie Gone with the Wind, which is set in the 1860s, and I go, oh my gosh, you know, Tara, the household that she lives in is so beautiful, that plantation style household. Oh my gosh, the beautiful dresses that Vivien Leigh wears in that film. They are so gorgeous. I long for the time in the 1860s where men would dress up in their suits and, you know, women had these beautiful gowns and there were balls and parties and all these different things. That doesn't mean that I want to do a run back of the Civil War and slavery. So it's just kind of insane to be this upset over this 1830s lyric, but nonetheless, people are making many a think piece, many a video about it. Here is jokes that people are already making on TikTok about Taylor Swift and this 1830s lyric.
Well, hello, miss.
Hi, is this the 1830s?
Oh, sure is. Sorry, I was just doing some work on my farm. I work alone, you see, so it can be quite strenuous.
Oh, so you guys don't have slavery?
Slavery? Good heavens, no. If anyone works on my farm, they are going to be paid very handsomely, because that is the moral and ethical thing to do.
Oh, so then people here aren't racist?
Racist? What's that? Is that like when you race horses or something? I'm just playing around. Anyway, sorry, I gotta go cook dinner for my African-American wife, who I love dearly, by the way. You have a good rest of your day, miss.
Wow, the 1830s sure are great.
Oh, you can say that again. Hey, you should write a song about it or something.
You know what? Maybe I will.
All right, have a good one.
Be so for real right now. She wrote this entire album. I think this entire album has nearly 11,000 words in it, by the way, which is just astounding. 11,000 words. And people just cannot help but hang on these two sentences. And I do think this is sort of the culture of sensitivity and trying to find something to be offended by, that we're just constantly like raking through things. And especially we do this to people who we dislike. And Taylor Swift is in that category for many, for an abundance of reasons. She's white. She's a billionaire. She's sort of in an untouchable class that, people want to bring down a lot. She has her little private jet and all that stuff that, people are sort of pissed about. So they want to find things to be upset about. And they're reading into this lyric. Here's more from TikTok.
Put your hands up if you're trying to go back to the 1830s. Who trying to run it back to when some of y'all didn't have no rights? You. Why you ain't raising your hand?
I don't want to answer that.
Oh, what was so bad about that time period, huh? We can pretend like racism wasn't like Taylor. Like that doesn't have to be.
And that was being black at a Taylor Swift concert. Apparently, that is the experience that that folks have going to this Taylor. going to a Taylor Swift concert and hearing that 1830s lyric. Here's another one on TikTok.
My thing is, what the heck was even going on in the 1830s for you to go back to and like all that much? Like the second French Revolution, the Oregon Trail, the Indian Removal Act, like the presidency of Martin Van Buren, like what is actually going on during the 1830s that you would actually want to go back to? Because I'm like, the 1830s ain't even that lit if you're going all the way back, for real. Like, if you wanted to, like, see the American Revolution, if you wanted to go to the 20s, and then the fact that she, you know how she knew that line was crazy? She had to do caveat, without the racism and, you know, women being property and all that. Girl, just, you picked the most, like, there is nothing even that big going on in the 1830s that's that interesting. What? Like, you didn't even pick the Civil War. You picked the most one of the most uninteresting decades of the entire 1800s.
What? You didn't even pick the Civil War? You mean to tell me she didn't pick the time where 600,000 American men just, like, lost their lives? I would probably be pre or post that historic event if I was going to pick a prior decade. Now I'm really racking my brain. You know, what decade do I long for? By virtue of being biracial, a lot of the options are canceled out for me. But if we're not taking that into account, I honestly have to think about this. I don't know that I have an answer. Do you have a decade that you long for, Taylor?
Oh, man. I mean, it changes based on whatever, like, book I'm reading. Like, yesterday on the drive home from the beach, I went to Florida for a wedding this past weekend. I listened to, like, a 5-part series on the Reformation, talking about Martin Luther from this new podcast I really like. And I wouldn't want to spend a lot of time in medieval Europe, but, you know, there are certain things that I'd be, like, fascinated to kind of witness, you know. So, and then before that, I read a biography on Benjamin Franklin, and he lived in, you know, 18th century France and in the late, you know, 1780s, 1790s. And that would be really interesting to just get a glimpse of. So I could always have answers. I'm just utterly fascinated by history, depending on what I'm reading about. So I get that. But I am genuinely curious to know, like, what about the 1830s interests Taylor Swift so much? I imagine it would be maybe that Victorian era, you know, like balls and gowns and maybe things like that. Because I had to look it up. Like, Andrew Jackson was the president then. I don't really know what was going on in the country in the 1830s. It's generally one of the more looked over periods of U.S. history. I guess there's, like, westward expansion and things like that. But yeah, very interesting choice of decade, I will say, but not one that I would consider offensive.
I'm more curious in her historical take on this than I am on her views of slavery during 1830s, because obviously slavery was wrong and we don't want to bring back slavery. And that's sort of the accusation that's being levied out to her. People are either misconstruing the lyrics and saying she wants to bring back slavery, or that she's a racist, or that, you know, there's plenty of racists in 2020. What are you talking about, you know, with the racists in 1830? And if you read a little bit further in the song, which is even funnier, I'll just pull up the lyrics. She says, everyone would look down because it wasn't fun now. Seems like it was never even fun back then. Nostalgia is a mind's trick. If I'd been there, I'd hate it. So she's essentially saying, you know, I can play all these games with myself where I think about decades prior that I would like to be in. But we all sort of have this tendency to hate where we're at right now and long for something else. But had we been there, we would find things to hate in that era, too. I would imagine slavery would be something that you would hate in that era. But if I had to think about why somebody would say they would long for the 1830s amongst their friends, I can just imagine from her perspective, it's sort of an obscure decade to throw out there because she wants to be unique in these lyrics. And that's very clear throughout this entire album if you give it a listen, if you're willing to do that. And she is talking about just a simpler time. We're pre-industrial, pre-social media. You get to, you know, be out in nature and people are homesteading and you're sort of at this inflection point with newspaper and magazines and media and poetry, which the title of the album has, you know, poet, tortured poet in it. So I think it was just a missed mark on a lyric. If that, because these people who are misconstruing the lyric and trying to, you know, throw out some baseless accusation at her clearly just have disdain for her as an individual and were trying to piece something together from this album, I think, to give that criticism to her a little bit more. Here's another TikTok in reference to this 1830s lyric.
How do you want to go back to the 1830s without the races, but you were just in 2023 dating one? Riddle me that.
And everybody seems to be just throwing out this same statement, and it's clearly in reference to the prior relationship with the 1975's Matty Healy, which you guys all know is my favorite band. And everybody, all the woke lefties on the internet refer to him as like a racist, a neo-Nazi, all these different things. He's so very clearly not any of those things and has songs about racism and police brutality and LGBTQ acceptance and all these different things, but they want to throw out these accusations and sort of piece together on their little mystery board with their red thread all the different ties that they can bring down, I guess, the Taylor Swift figure with. And this 1830s line just happened to be the one that got her. It's all over. I mean, the amount of people that are talking about what is a throwaway line in a song with so many other things going on is astounding. But that's the life of celebrity.
Yeah, and how crazy is it also that Taylor Swift is generally someone who's very supportive of progressive causes. She, in 2020, was tweeting about Black Lives Matter and mm-hmm. police brutality and very much like on that side of the issues. And of course, we've seen in her music videos and stuff, she's very forward with her activism about pro-LGBTQ stuff. And some of the criticism I've seen of the new album is that she's been very like even more sort of vocal and aggressive towards Christians or towards like kind of pearl-clutching conservatives and stuff like that in her music. So generally that would place you on the same side as a lot of these people. And yet no one is safe, right? If you put a single toe out of line, whether you're Matty Healy or Taylor Swift, even, and you're generally supportive of the causes, if you miss the mark on one little thing, like a throwaway lyric and referencing a latent nostalgia for the 1830s, then all of a sudden you're a pariah. It's just wild how puritanical they are.
Yeah, it's very strange because it's a mixing of world views, and I guess I don't know. I think about like the intersectionality of it, because that's what leftists talk about all the time. So by market, you know, Taylor Swift's a woman, so this is somebody that they really should be rooting for, but she is a white woman, which makes it a very difficult for people to root for her. Plus she is a very rich white woman, so often the criticism that I see of her has to do with her whiteness and her whiteness sort of blurring the lines of the activism that she does try to do. And it has to do with the fact that nobody can be ethically as rich as she is with what she's done in society and the product that she's created, that is her brand, that is her music. So the activism that she does as a leftist, which we've spoken about, as Taylor said, she's spoken about climate change, a little bit hypocritical with the PJ usage, but she's also a celebrity that I think a lot of people don't understand what it would look like for her to fly, commercially or to travel commercially. I don't think people really understand what that lifestyle is like for somebody of that caliber and of that status, but I digress. So she's got the climate stuff. She's got the LGBT stuff. In her documentary, she was crying about wanting to influence elections and like whether or not she should step in and tell people how to vote and how important elections are for left-leaning causes. But now a lot of leftists look at her and say that she is like a performative activist, that she is a white feminist, not a feminist, but a white feminist who's sort of obscuring the actual feminist message with her whiteness. And really what this all means is you just can't win. You can't win no matter what you do. Her different identities of, I guess, being white and being rich cancel out what she could do on an ideological level for these people that agree with her. And because she's grown to such a status, she's no longer relatable to the people, I think, who would have once resonated with a political message that she put out. And thus she is outcast and pushed off to the side. She's going to be fine. Because she's rich and talented and popular and hugely successful. But it's just interesting to watch it happen. And for somebody who is so unrelatable in lifestyle and in status and in wealth, what really stuck out about this album is this really deep attempt to be relatable in the wake of all of that, which it just doesn't hit. It doesn't hit. Unfortunately, but I like some of her other stuff. So I'm not a Taylor Swift hater, as I said at the beginning. So Swifties, do not come for my neck. Okay.
My last thought on that, based on what you said about like it, you just not being able to win, is like, even if she would have said 1930s, that's still considered racist because it's pre civil rights era. And then now apparently that hasn't even fixed racism in America. So if you said the 90s and you're nostalgic for that, well, is that an endorsement of Rodney King? It's just it's this dumb worldview where you're never. If you say anything, not even positive about the past or about America and its history, but even just something neutral and an attempt to just be human and say, hey, when I was, maybe that's what she's doing here is like, hey, when I was younger and we did this little exercise or this little game where we said, what decade would you go back to? I used to say 1830s. Maybe that's an effort on her part to just give a sort of personal, neutral, true nugget to the fans. And that's met with because of the, you know, charged climate in which we live, where everything is racist just because if you mention the past in a neutral way or positive way, then of course we have to bring the race issue into the conversation. Like, you know, my listening and interest in a podcast about, you know, medieval Europe is not an endorsement of feudalism. Like, let's just be clear here. And it's just so silly. And to me, it's just like indicative of a really simplistic and dumb and annoying worldview, to be honest, where all you can do when you hear anything positive or neutral about history is just to, you know, immediately cry racism. Like, I'm sorry, get over it.
Yeah, and it starts to sound more ridiculous, like, the more examples that you give of it, and there truly is no winning with an answer. The fact that you even have to add the caveat, like, at the end of, without all the racists, like, just to let you guys know, you can tell there's sort of, like, this fearful energy to even saying the lyric in the first place, that you have to disclaim that you don't mean that you want to go back to a time when slavery was happening. And we see this happen over and over again. The Bachelor had all this drama because some of the female contestants, I guess, had went to an antebellum party where they dressed up in old antebellum South style clothing. And you're not even allowed to do that, to place yourself in a historical setting by wearing the fashion of that time. If there was some sort of crime against humanity being committed at that time, like, please make it make sense. It's not an endorsement of the entirety of what was happening within the decade to shout out the decade or to wear fashion from a decade prior to you. Because I want to wear 1960s hippie clothing doesn't mean I endorse the Vietnam War. It doesn't make sense for this to happen. And just the more you distill it down, like, imagine somebody saying, you know, I would have loved to be on a Nickelodeon show in the early 2000s, and someone going, that's disgusting. Do you know that a lot of those children were, like, abused and sexualized behind the scenes? It's like, whoa. Okay, well, yeah, I wasn't talking about the awful abuse and trauma that befell people. I was talking about the cool part, you know, the television show that I have nostalgia for, that I like to watch as a young person. And people can't seem to apply that context to the situation, or they very purposefully throw out the context, but for the sake of what? I don't know, to, like, feed
virtue
the flames?
Signaling, I think,
yeah. Yeah, I guess so, to just make a statement. So, I don't know. Obviously, she's never going to address this controversy. I wouldn't either. The best thing you can do now when people come after you in any way, shape, or form, especially when they're choosing to throw out context in the midst of their argument, is to just not address it and let it move on. And it will go through the same cycle that every little bit of controversy goes through, where in a week's time, nobody is talking about this any longer. So shout out to Taylor Swift. I don't think she'll ever write an 1830s lyric ever again.
And hey, the Swifties have been mad at us before because we've been critical of her on other issues.
Yeah. But
we came to bat for her defense today because it's an unreasonable assault against her. So
yes, we did. And I'm sure she's listening to this right now in her private jet as she flies from Orlando to Miami. Oh, okay. Now, what are we getting to? We're going to talk about the Watcher controversy. You know, how long ago now did we get the Try Guys apology on the good old couch where the three of them sat together and apologized for Ned Fulmer being a little adulterer, which what that had to do with their channel, I guess he was sleeping with their employee, so he had to go. Now we have three more BuzzFeed guys sitting on a couch giving us an apology, and I'll tell you exactly why. So this is from the YouTube channel known as Watcher. There are the three guys right here. Their YouTube channel focuses around, you know, crime, unsolved and solved mysteries, paranormal stuff. They do a little bit of gaming, a lot of different stuff, and you'll recognize them if you were on like OG YouTube watching all the BuzzFeed videos back in the day, because they were doing BuzzFeed's Unsolved, specifically these two on the right. And this guy, Steven, he did like all the BuzzFeed food videos where they would go around and try things of like the lower price up to the most expensive price. So these are really familiar faces if you were on, you know, OG YouTube watching these guys back in the dizzy. But they have their own channel now that has nearly 3 million subscribers where they do all this crime, unsolved, solve, mystery stuff. And they decided, hey, we are going to start moving our channel in another direction. And we want to create a streaming service that puts our product behind a paywall, puts our videos behind a paywall. Now, it was one of the lower paywalls you've heard of when it comes to streaming services. They were saying $6 a month. I believe it might have even been $5.99, but I digress. And you guys can get access to the Watcher content. Now, was this the best time to do that? I don't think so. I don't necessarily think it was an immoral move on the part of these guys. If you are building a channel, you're finding success, you want to branch out and do other things, at some point you kind of have to take the leap and move on to other endeavors. Where I think this might have been a misjudgment is that I don't know how valuable, you know, a YouTube show that people have been getting for free is with just three guys who are, you know, doing these videos. Is, do I want to pay $6 a month to pay for what I've been watching on YouTube for free? Y'all, I don't really even pay for YouTube Premium, so I won't get all of YouTube with no ads, let alone pay for a specific channel for $6 a month. So from a business perspective, I don't know that it was the thing I would have made. I would have maybe thought of other products or things that you could have people buy or pay into so that they could do other endeavors. But I guess their line of thinking was, we want to put this behind a paywall. Our very loyal fans will hop on and do this $6 a month thing, and then we can branch out and hire more people and create more shows, and the streaming service will build itself as it goes along. That did not work. I have never seen like the wave of negative comments that sat under that video was insane. People were saying, you know, why they think their content is worth $6 a month is a mystery that will remain unsolved. Oh no. They were getting roasted. They lost thousands upon thousands upon thousands of subscribers. The last time I checked on their channel, they were at 2.9 million. Now they're at 2.8 3 million subscribers, and this was just a wave of people coming after them and saying it's not the economy for this. We can't afford $6 a month to pay for this. A lot of the trending content that I'm seeing right now on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube is considerably young people complaining about the cost of living today and saying that we don't make enough money to really make it by. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. And that seems to be the general sentiment among young people right now. That's why I feel like this moment for that announcement was probably not the best time, and you probably could have waited a little bit. Also in the video, I believe Steven says, we made this paywall $6 because everybody can afford $6 a month. And people were really pissed to hear that they think everybody can afford $6 a month. And they felt like it was a little out of touch. I'll play a little clip of Moist Critical reacting to this so you can check it out.
May 31st.
Steven, talk about money.
Here, what's this price?
You can become a member of Watcher for $5.99 a month or $59.99 a year.
We want to keep the price low enough where anybody and everybody is able to afford it, but it also wants to support the things that we do here. So that was the number that just made the most sense for the streamer.
That's very out of touch. I don't know how I missed that. I don't know how that flew under my radar. That is extraordinarily out of touch. That face right there says it all. Yep, that one just got ripped. Fuck it, we'll do it live, I guess. That's going in the final cut. Are we sure? Eek. Do you think they can't cover operation fees? No, I don't think that's the case. I really don't. They make high-quality content. They have, like, it is going to cost money to make it. But they're making long-form videos. And I'm pretty confident, since they worked at BuzzFeed Unsolved, they have a pretty high RPM and they know how to optimize mid-rolls. I bet these videos are bringing in more than they're costing to produce. Just off the AdSense would be my guess.
So, there you go. Hard to tell. Of course, this controversy they had to respond to and respond to immediately. And thus, we get three more former BuzzFeed employees who are male on a couch apologizing. And I find that kind of hilarious. And what a full circle moment. I don't think we'll get the same sort of salaciousness behind this one, because the Ned Fulmer one was absolutely crazy. Even SNL did a skit of recreating the Try Guys apology. I don't think we'll get that with the Watcher apology. But here is a little bit of it so that you can hear from the guys themselves.
Hey everyone, last Friday we announced that we're leaving YouTube and launching our new streaming platform.
We messed up. A lot of you spoke out with extremely valid comments and concerns, and we want to take the time now to address those.
We've been reading the things you've been saying, and we're sorry for the way we handled this, as well as the way we communicated it. We understand where you're coming from, and we're making immediate changes.
First, we want to affirm that you are the reason why we've been able to do anything at this company. You helped us every step of the way when we left BuzzFeed to start Watcher at the top of the pandemic in 2020.
You've supported us in so many ways by watching our content, attending our live shows, buying our merch, becoming members of our Patreon, and giving words of encouragement over the years. And we are incredibly grateful for your support.
We're sorry for how we originally delivered our goodbye message to YouTube. It was insensitive. We didn't properly express how much we appreciate all of you. And we did a really bad job of explaining the reasoning behind this transition.
We also want to deeply apologize for our ignorance around the impact of the cost. We regret stating and implying that it's a price that anybody can afford, and we fully acknowledge that it is not. We didn't take the proper consideration for how this cost would affect you, and hope you know that we are taking this as a serious learning experience. With that in mind, we're making some changes to ensure that there's a way for our community to continue watching our content for free.
Okay, there you go. Now, there's no good way to do an apology. I can just say that right now. There is no YouTube apology that I feel like you can watch and be like, that felt absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head, because it's just a tough thing to do. I can imagine it's even more difficult when you're in the midst of like great controversy and there's three guys with three probably very different opinions on how you go about this, and they have a whole team and staff, and you're just watching the subscriber count just fall over and over and over and over. So this is difficult. You know, I think they did an all right job. They probably really fine-tuned the apology and, you know, put it through Grammarly and shit to make sure everything was okay. And I guess what they finally decided is we are going to create our separate streaming platform. And yes, it is something that you can pay for, and our videos are going to go up on that platform. But down the line, they will be released on YouTube for free. So the people who are subscribed to this streaming service get the videos first, and then YouTube will get them for free. I believe they said a month later, and that was where they sort of decided things were going to fall. I'm sure there's other details throughout this video, and you can go check it out if you are great fans of this. But it's an interesting just moment, I guess, in culture with where streaming has largely become a very business-oriented thing, where what people go to you for is not necessarily for the business, even though they're getting a product out of it. They're going to you because they feel like they have a great relationship with you. They love the content that you're putting out and they're used to getting it for free. So if that expectation is set that you are going to get something for free and all of a sudden somebody tries to, you know, shift that expectation on you and say, I want $6 a month from you in order to give you what you have been getting for free, it doesn't go too well. Now, do I think most people who watch their content probably could afford $6 a month to buy something like this? I'm sure. I'm sure they're going out and buying lattes and, you know, matcha oat milk and all this stuff and all this different things while they're watching Watcher. But they kind of told them, hey, your content is not, it's not worth that for me, brother. I'm so sorry. Yikes.
Yeah, and that seems like the biggest miscalculation is like people can afford $6 a month, but you're a YouTube show and people are paying like what, 10 or 12 bucks a month for all of Netflix. And so just in the content economy we're in, everyone's complaining about how, you know, these different platforms are fusing together and you have to pay for this one, that one, and the other one, and Paramount over here, HBO over here, right, in order to access the same content that you used to have on cable. So we're coming back full circle to having cable. So now if you have to pay $6 a month for your one YouTube show, plus you got to pay for your Disney Plus and your HBO Max and everything else, like, yeah, it's going to be totally out of hand. And I think that that's a miscalculation, especially when, like you're saying, you set the precedent of people being able to access this content for free. And now all of a sudden you're just denying them that and saying you got to pay. Of course you're going to be met with backlash. So maybe they were a little bit high on their own supply here. The apology was also, I think they were right to do it. And you guys seem to agree. I did a quick poll. Should they have apologized? Were they right to do that and reverse their decision? And you guys, 60% of you are saying yes. So you agree there. But interestingly, you guys also agreed that it wasn't necessarily immoral of them to make this move in the first place or try to charge for their content. But it was just a misread. And, you know, I think they would have been better off on the apology front, just being like making a more tongue-in-cheek video of like, okay, so, you know,
That was a
mistake and we own it. And sorry, guys. So sorry. That was really dumb of us. We were out of touch and we're going to reverse it. But this like polished PR statement, it's like eye roll and cringe. And I think they'd have been better off just kind of like, you know, swallowing the bitter pill and laughing at themselves, because I think that's, you know, they're somewhat comedic. But are you going to read some of the comments, though? Because those were hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Let's go and take a look. Yeah. They should have busted out the old Colleen Ballinger ukulele. Toxic.
Oh, God.
Gossip train. And see how that worked out for them. Let's see. Okay. If I had a nickel for every time I saw 3X BuzzFeed employees on a couch on a couch post controversy, I'd have two nickels. The ex BuzzFeed employee to three guys on the apology couch pipeline is insane. We would have no problem with a production budget cut, lads. We're here for you, not the fun sets. Wow. So let's see here. While it is hilarious that they had to pull together this video so quickly, I am acknowledging that it takes balls to come on and say, yeah, we effed up here. And here's how we're going to fix it. Thank you guys for apologizing and for your insensitive comment and for making changes. Just please remember the audience is here for you guys and not the high budget production. I feel like this is going to happen a lot within like the streaming world, because we're sort of in this new space right now where streamers are becoming really big really quickly, and that's like infusing things with a lot of money. Like you watch Kai Cenat or iShowSpeed. These guys are millionaires off of streaming platforms in their bedrooms, and that can sort of change up the dynamic and what you want to do. And I think these BuzzFeed guys largely want to be like really big creatives and really big producers. So when they get the opportunity to do that, they want to swing at the opportunity. And they want to create high production items. Now, I don't know what their budget actually looks like, how much money they make from YouTube, and whether or not they're just trying to get more money or if they actually need more budget. They stated in here that they need to make this move in order to pay their employees and continue working at the pace they're working at while branching out and creating bigger things. So I don't know. You'll have different people who want to do different things with the success that you give them as an audience. To me, it's not surprising that they wanted to make a change like this and build into a streaming service. It just might not have been the best way to communicate it or the best, you know, launch pad for said project. And maybe you should have had like a grace period of like, we're going to continue to give you guys free content because that is what you're here for. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you do that successfully. It's a tough thing. I would not be a consultant on this case.
Yeah, literally. I mean, is there anyone who's successfully gone from providing content free to going 100% behind a paywall? I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm sure there's some examples out there, but just if you're a creator, your most valuable thing is your connection to your audience. Like that, you have to prioritize them over everything. And it's like there should be like this sort of appreciation for the people who bless you with their attention that seeps through everything that you do. And like the community aspect of it, it's like you're not treating them like a community when you're saying, now we have this relationship where you're going to pay me and you're going to have the privilege of accessing my content. It's a more community aspect to it. Is they have a Patreon, but it'd be like, hey, we have this really big idea we want to go after. We're going to crowdfund this as a community. Mm-hmm. We can't do it unless we hit this amount of budget. Can you guys help us out like that? Now you're cultivating ownership and community, and there's that respect and openness and everything. And I think that's maybe a failure in their analysis of the situation. And it's easy, I imagine, to kind of get blinders and be more focused on your own creative enterprise or whatever, and that make you lose sight of the audience. But they definitely got a wake-up call with this situation.
Yeah, you got to be like Costco with the hot dogs. Things got to remain the same price, I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good example.
You can't go switching up the hot dog price on people, even when the world is going crazy. But yeah, I mean, I wish them all the best. Like I said, I used to love BuzzFeed Unsolved and stuff, and I'm glad that they found their little successful niche and they're running with it. Hopefully they find a way to do it. Okay. Now, we said we were going to get into Hollywood. There's been lots of talk of all the different plastic surgery that different celebrities are getting these days, and non-celebrities. I see a lot of young girls now, especially living here in LA, Los Angeles, women just going around and getting all different types of stuff done to their face. They got the filler in the lips, the masseter, Botox, the cheek filler, under eye filler, buccal fat removal, Ozempic shots, all these different things. But now apparently, plastic surgeons are warning of something known as Ozempic face that is taking over Hollywood. And the drug Ozempic, as it does create weight loss, is actually causing people to lose the fat in their face. And in Ozempic face, when you see it, there's loss of fullness underneath the eyes, loss of the buccal fat here in the cheeks, and you do kind of get a little bit of a skeletal look. Several doctors claimed to the Daily Mail that celebs from John Goodman to Sharon Osbourne are among those who are hardest hit by the alleged condition. For the uninitiated, some side effects of taking Ozempic include sunken eyes, gaunt cheeks, and saggy skin, often making the user appear older and more deflated. So in an effort to sort of look youthful, to be fitter, to look a little nicer, you get what's called Ozempic face. And I'm going to try and show you some examples here of some celebrities. I think there are some in this article, but Sharon Osbourne definitely has Ozempic face. You can see here Jessica Simpson has got a little bit of Ozempic face. And I think it just sort of speaks to when you try to achieve a goal through unnatural means, you will meet an unnatural end. And while Ozempic may achieve the goal of making you look thinner and skinnier because it is, you know, an agent of medicine rather than something that is going to bring you that like diet and fitness, sometimes you're going to lose those features that you probably did like about yourself and maybe did not want to see lost in your face. Yeah, you can see it here. A little bit of Zempy face going on.
John Goodman.
Yeah, and then Sharon Osbourne definitely has Ozempic face as well, and she's very open about her Ozempic usage. Kelly Osbourne famously was talking about Ozempic and said, you know, why not? It's so much easier than losing fat the healthy way by exercising. I don't see why people wouldn't use Ozempic. And the only reason that people sort of hate on Ozempic or talk about Ozempic is because they can't afford it, is what her argument was on that. Not because it's probably best to lose weight through discipline and not use a drug that is meant for patients with diabetes. Not because there's anything wrong with that, but because they can't afford it. That's why people are choosing not to use Ozempic. And like I said, yeah, it might get you your result, but it's going to have some unnatural things happen in the wake of it, I think. And that's so often what we see with a lot of these medical procedures. They now have celebrities who are taking the buckle fat out of their cheeks, which looks good momentarily when you're youthful and gives you a little bit of like an editorial, you know, pulled in look. But when your face ages, that fat wears away naturally and you lose the fullness in your face. So if you've already sucked the fat out and then you lose the fullness in your face, you're giving yourself essentially Ozempic face yet again. So
yeah,
it's not working out.
No, I mean, and that's pretty much it. There's no shortcuts in life, and there are trade-offs to choices that you make. And I mean, you know, I don't begrudge people for wanting to lose weight and using this new emerging technology, but these are certainly side effects to be aware of. And you know, I saw recently a clip. I think it was Joe Rogan talking about a conversation he had with William Shatner, and he said told him that he carries extra weight because his face looks better when he has a little more weight, and if he lost too much, then his face was worse for TV. So there is that. And I guess for these celebrities, though, they can afford procedures if the Ozempic makes your face too gaunt by having you lose the weight too rapidly. You can just shoot it back full of fillers and then you're good to go, right? I don't know. On and on we go.
Yeah, I just try. I'm like, it's so difficult. Sometimes you see celebrities that like really do great, like not that they do great work as in like I'm endorsing it, but just that they get work done. You're like, okay, I can see exactly why you did that. But still, it's the principle of the matter. I can't endorse these things. It's just, it's the wild, wild west out there when it comes to like facial reconstruction and changing the body and all these different things. And I wonder what's the next big thing that we get that people do, or what's the next facial trend or body type, because it just seems to be a never ending cycle of new things that we follow. I think it's got to be quite daunting to keep up with as a celebrity. You have to imagine they're probably really hyper concerned about their own relevance, their look. You're in a space of unique judgmental force of just everybody looking at everything you do and having comments about it, and then you get work done and it maybe works or it doesn't work, or you go on Ozempic and you lose the weight but it changes your face and all these different things. It's got to be exhausting. It really does. So I mean, I feel for them to some respect, but I hope this is not just like an ongoing thing that just continues to be perpetuated and pushed to people. But I see a lot of people advocating for Ozempic online, a lot of people saying just do it, and the results are all over the place. I feel like it works for some, and then some look kind of skeletal, and then others take Ozempic and they lose a ton of weight, and then because they haven't built habits around that loss of weight, they gain it all back as soon as they're off Ozempic, and sometimes even more. So it just doesn't seem natural, or well, we know it's not natural. It just doesn't seem healthy, or it doesn't seem to be having a positive impact in any way.
Yeah, and it just hasn't been around long enough either to really know like what all the side effects are, just what can happen. And I think that there's something to be said for that too, is like you see people like Elon or others that are just have this very kind of cavalier endorsement of it that is like, oh yeah, everyone should do it, this is awesome, it's like a great thing, great medicine. And it's like, as far as we know, and even so, like you said, it's often just used as sort of a band-aid for an unwillingness or inability to like adapt one's lifestyle in a more sustainable manner. And, you know, that's just life, man. There's no shortcuts. So.
Yeah. And I always feel like, okay, yeah, because the Elon Musk takes what, Wegovy, I think, which is another injectable that changes your weight. I think, I don't know if that's a pill or injectable. You guys have to tell me in the comments down below and let me know. But there's one thing, something to be said about it that I don't think people talk about enough. It's like, okay, yeah, you can lose the weight through, you know, exercise and diet, or you can lose the weight through Ozempic, and the results will largely be the same as in terms of aesthetic. But if you lose all the weight through Ozempic and you don't change your patterns and your diet and what you're doing to impact your body, you may not gain weight back. But gaining weight is your body telling you what you're doing to it, and is its way of showing you, hey, you know, you might not be doing the healthiest thing here, or this is how what you're eating is impacting your body. And if you're taking drugs to sort of cover what is your body's communication to you, you're actually handicapping yourself in a lot of ways. Because so often people in the body positivity movement and who like to call out fat phobia will say, you know, I see skinny people all the time who are eating In-N-Out and Chipotle and chips and chocolate and ice cream, and it doesn't affect them. But when a fat person does it, they get judgment. And I totally understand that argument. I would argue, however, though, that the skinny person who's eating all this unhealthy food and it's not affecting their body, it's going to come to affect them sooner or later. They just don't get to see the results of the garbage that they end up putting in their body. And we all do it. Your girl loves In-N-Out. Flying Dutchman, whole grill onion wrapped. That's my order, baby girl, with the chopped chilies, okay? But I know that that's just not good for you. And I still eat it anyways.
You're one of those people who orders the Flying Dutchman that takes forever to make.
I really do. I'm so sorry to all the In-N-Out workers here in California, but also you guys make like $22 an hour, so I don't know how sorry I am anymore. I would have been sorry back in the day, but now give me two.
You're fine.
You're going to be fine. You're going to be just fine. I think we're going to get into your guys' super chats.
Okay, let's do it. Who's kicking us off this week? It's Julian Giangrande.
Wow.
Who says, I would choose the 50s and 60s as their decade. Oh. I'm assuming the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, I'm assuming that as well. Oh my gosh, the style of that time, the music of that time. There's so many like really great things. The literature back then, there's a lot going on, but you're also a racist because that was prior to the civil rights movement. So how dare you say that when we were living in Jim Crow at the time. You just can't say anything these days. How dare you?
Racist,
how absolutely dare you?
And there's something to be said too. I think I've heard Tom Sowell talk about how like in, was it early part of the 20th century, like there was black families were wealthier, better off in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Civil Rights Act.
Yep.
And I'm not to say that the Civil Rights Act wasn't obviously necessary and that it was necessary to end Jim Crow and that was horrible and segregation was horrible.
Yeah.
But also there's another side of that story that is often looked over when you have this very simplistic, pre-1964, everything was horrible and racist and segregated.
Right.
And it's like there's two sides to that story.
You had more black families together, like education rates were really good. There was good stuff going on, but we have like this black and white view of history that's like, it was good time. It was bad time. He was good guy. She was bad guy. It's just like, that's not, you can't view history in that way. You have to have nuance, which is exactly why somebody like Taylor Swift can say, I longed for the 1830s. And somebody can say, I long for the 1950s or 60s.
Yeah. And all also right. For the, it was good time, it was bad time people, or for the people who cry racism, I should say, there was no good time. Like, is there ever a time where America or the West wasn't plagued with colonialism or racism or patriarchy or one of these things? It's like their whole worldview is in opposition to America or Western ideals, or, you know, that being a good thing. And
yeah, dude.
And so they have nothing good to say about any point in history.
We're going to be like in 2070 and I'm going to be like, oh, I long for the days of the 2020s. And they're going to be like, the wage gap that existed between men and women at the time truly states that you're a misogynist for saying that you long for the 2020s. There's with people who have this mindset, nothing is ever good. That's such a good point, Taylor. Like, everything is always a problem. Right now, we're living in an era of systemic racism, according to those people. So in 30 years from now, if you say you long for the 2020s and you want to wear 2020s fashion, or I don't know, what do we do now in the 2020s that's culturally significant? Listen to mumble rap and vape? if that's what you want to do, if you long for the days of vapid social media and Netflix and chill, you are going to be a racist misogynist.
The transphobia of the 2020s and people who didn't let trans people in women's bathrooms and spaces and prisons and sports. Oh my gosh, how could you ever want to go back there?
Exactly.
Oh dear. Yes. Anyway, good super chat. Sammy RN says she likes to be talked about. It's part of her business model. That's why she does things like make weird lyric choices or date certain people.
Oh, dude, 100%. I mean, I think one of the best descriptors of like Taylor Swift core, if we want to call it that, is just arrested development and teenagerdom is what I would define her stuff as. She is for like the last 20 years stayed in a state of arrested teenagerdom development where she's constantly talking about the guys she's dating and doing all the self-referential lyrics and throwing in little dramas and the I love to love him, I hate to hate him, all this different stuff. And she's in her mid-30s now. So I don't know like how long this goes on for. I don't know what 40-year-old Taylor Swift looks like and what her music sounds like, but I think there needs to, at some point, be a decision of like, we did that. Now I want to focus on being a classic, timeless artist because I don't think she's struck that yet. I think she's struck like a caliber of celebrity where Taylor Swift is going to be remembered and for a very, very long time. I have yet to hear like the Whitney Houston kind of timeless nature from her and from her music. So I hope there's like a focus on that.
Yeah, I think that's an astute observation. It seems like a lot of Swiftiedom is people who kind of grew up with that or like either came into that age with her or kind of came into that age in the wake of her while she's still doing this. But it is kind of sad when you frame it like that. And it almost reminds me, obviously it's an extreme example, but like of those, you know, mukbang YouTubers who kind of
just
make
themselves
this video of them doing something unhealthy and crazy, and like maybe Taylor Swift and her music is talking about the unhealthy toxic relationships she's had with her guys or whatever, and then that goes viral, everyone loves it, and they're like, wow, that was so cool, you ate that food and it was amazing how much food you ate, and then they have to do it again and they have to do it again, and like they just stay there and they're aging and maybe continuing to have an unhealthy lifestyle and unhealthy patterns, but not actually like moving on and maturing and going in a healthy way in life.
It's kind of
sad after
and
a while.
And it's art at the end of the day, so that's cool. Like, I'm sure, obviously, in her personal life, she's developing and moving on and doing things like that. I just, like, with the amount of success that she's built and, like, being a billionaire and all that, wouldn't it be cool to have, like, one timeless song that, like, truly stands the test of, you know, whatever time goes by? You know, that'd be cool. I think that would be my next venture. Also, I don't know who produced this album, but move on. Find somebody else, because every single song was like just the same kind of like droning, mundane, whatever was going on in the production area of this project was not for me. Sorry, Taylor. Sorry, okay. Other Taylor.
Looks Max, not Trans Max, says, hey gang, if you could go back in time, what's the number one piece of advice you would give your younger self? No winning money. I'd go back and tell myself to start looks maxing now and about the 304 lottery.
Oh my gosh. Tell him to start looks. I mean, honestly, if you go back and tell your younger self to looks, it's not the worst bit of advice I would give something, but I would tell myself, chill out, girl. The world is not ending. Like, nobody's coming for you. Just chill out and just be happy and explore the world. But, you know, my younger self led to my older self, so I don't really know that I need to create whatever butterfly effect happens in the wake of giving that version of myself that advice, if that makes sense.
Yeah, agree.
I'd leave her alone.
I wouldn't really wanna. Yeah, same.
Yeah.
It's like that movie scene where like you're in the past and you see yourself like, should I talk to you? Should I not? And I don't think I would.
Yeah.
I don't think it's meant to be. So
100%.
I don't have a good answer to that either. You said no money, but I would be like, buy Bitcoin, Apple, and Tesla is what I would say.
Get in early on Bitcoin. Yeah. That reminds me of the movie Meet the Robinsons. I love the movie Meet the Robinsons, guys. And if you have not seen that film, it's animated. But it's so good. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. But that's just a side note. Watch Meet the Robinsons. I stan Meet the Robinsons.
Stanning. Legitly Spelunking says, may you live in interesting times. That's a quote. Upside down smiley face. If nothing was happening in 1830, maybe that's why she wanted to go. Such an overreaction to a throwaway line, for real.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh my gosh, talk about reading into something. But we are in the era of like video essays and think pieces and everything on the smallest of things, which I kind of like. I kind of like this over analytical sort of generation that we're in right now, because it does just helps you think and it makes you contend with things that you probably wouldn't normally be thinking about. But my goodness, it really was a throwaway lyric, and we are here, we are talking about it.
Yeah, you like the over analytical nature of our time. It's like, as a cultural commentator, YouTuber,
of course. I do, of course. I can look into the smallest thing and start giving you an essay about it.
And that is a better use of it than like mindless, you know, I don't know, hedonism or other things that people give themselves to. And it's something to be said for like, this is, and I know it seems like we have endless wars around the world and whatnot, but like, it's relative peace. There's not like, you know, the specter of nuclear war like we had in during the Cold War. There's not like a World War II level, like, you know, Nazi Germany trying to take over the world or anything like that. So in the absence of that, you can either kind of just take that for granted and give yourself over to nonsense and whatnot, or you can at least reflect on things and try to have some informed perspective on the world and navigate it with some gratitude and nuance. So
100%. You know how many people, like, I think about back in the day of like the what men used to do, where they would just like stand on a tree stump and just start yapping. That was the podcast bros back in the day. They were just standing on tree stumps and yapping at the general public for hours. And debates used to be just like 1 hour of a man talking, and then another hour of a man talking, then a 3 hour rebuttal, then a 3 hour rebuttal. And people would just sit in the theater and outside and just be listening to these guys just yap about random things that they were thinking about. We're all here to think. So just,
yeah, I mean, not to belabor it, but I read J.R.R. Tolkien's, not autobiography, but a biography about him. And then I mentioned the Ben Franklin earlier, and both of them, it seemed like if you were in that pre-industrial era that Taylor Swift was talking about, mm-hmm. and you were at all like a thoughtful, like intelligent person, you were into books, and then you would get together with other people who were into books, and you would share your thoughts on what you're reading. They would write poetry. They would just have deep discussions about the classics and different mm-hmm. things like that. And like, they would share essays and things they'd been working on. And that was kind of how you built friendships. And just think of how, you know, in our TikTok age of and short attention spans and not a lot of critical thinking and such, like what a different time it is, where back then you would have to like practice the Socratic method and learning how to communicate your ideas, learning how to defend them against other people who are bringing their own ideas and criticizing yours. And even like the artful side of it, of like cultivating poetry, is just so much more depth. And, you know, I maybe I'm with Taylor Swift now. I'm talking myself into it. I'll go to 1830.
Romanticizing the past.
Yeah. But then we don't get AC or healthcare or anything like that.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
Okay, well, we gotta go through some of these faster, but y'all have some good conversation starters, I guess. Cindy Brennan says, my first live, I'm in Australia, and I just finished an all-nighter working on an assignment. In bed to decompress by watching YouTube and noticed your live.
Oh, yay, love that for you. Yeah, I used to pull many an all-nighter when I was in school doing assignments, because I was a legend, wait for it, dairy procrastinator. I used to procrastinate on everything in school. I would have months worth of assignments that would just build up, and the night before they were due, I would just stay up all night to do every single assignment and then turn them in. And look, who would have thought we'd be here? Not me, but not I me. Made it.
Melissa F. says, I'm a Swiftie, and this is one of my favorite songs on the album. This feels like a literacy problem. The point is that nostalgia makes you forget about the bad parts of what you feel nostalgia for.
See, well, there you go. There you go. I think it's very clear if you just go and read the lyrics. I think a lot of people just don't read the lyrics. I think a little snippet of the lyrics went out on Twitter or something, and people screenshotted it and said, oh my gosh, I cannot believe she said this. And they probably didn't even listen to the song. I think that's what happened with this one.
Yeah, it's cringe, brah. Cringe. Mm-hmm. Maui says, happy Monday, everyone. Taylor could not even mean the U.S. I was getting Regency era like Jane Austen. That's 1811 to 1820. But girls love those books.
There you go. Could be. She could literally mean anything. And that's the point of art, of course. And it's so interesting that we have more like creation and music and entertainment and than anything, and less analysis than ever. It's just like people take a lyric, whatever the first thing that comes to their mind that they think of that makes them feel offended, they just run with that. And that's clearly what it means and what she meant. And there's no nuance whatsoever when something could mean a million different things.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about like how, you know, wokeness kind of ruins comedy and free speech and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that kind of manifest in music a little bit, where it's like you can express all your creativity within these confines of these ideas and this appreciation for history or whatever. And like, you don't go outside of these boundaries or else, you know, we're all going to dogpile on you. And it just stifles creative freedom in art and comedy. And it makes for a worse society where we have less profound and interesting artistry.
And funnily enough, I'm going to go on a tangent here and talk about Maddie Healy, because this is exactly what happened to me. And in this TikTok where the girl says, oh, you know, what does Taylor care about the racist in 1830? She was dating a racist in 2024 or whatever she says about him. All of this is basically hinged on salacious stories about him and a lyric in a song where he says, thank you, Kanye, very cool. And during a concert, he like does the little Hitler hand motion and says, thank you, Kanye, very cool. And the lyric is meant to be sarcastic, as in, thank you, Kanye, such a cool thing, as in, like, I used to look up to you, and then you said this horrible thing that I can no longer endorse, so thanks for that. And people ran with it and saying, he did the Hitler salute, he's a neo-Nazi, he's a white supremacist. She goes, how dense do you have to be in the brain to not take just 5 seconds of analysis on a lyric to see yourself out of the level of offensiveness that you're feeling right now? But people do not want to be ushered out of feeling offended. You would think it would be a real big weight lifted for somebody to say, oh, no, wait, you totally misunderstood that. When she said 1830s, this is what she meant. Or when he said, thank you, Kanye, very cool, this is what he meant. Don't you feel so much better because you thought that there were white supremacists, but now I'm telling you why they're not white supremacists. And instead, they are so beholden to the idea and they so badly want it to be true that they defend it at the expense of logic. Because they want to be offended. They want to be angry. They don't want that burden lifted off of them. And that is the reality.
Mm-hmm. It's ideological conformity. They've staked their identity on a certain worldview and a group of people who share that worldview. And that's all they care about. Their logic is in service to supporting those narratives. And that is the be all end all of why you do anything. So it's not art for artistry's sake. It's not there for it to be profound or something to marvel at or enjoy or make you reflect on life or anything like that. It's like it needs to fit the propagandistic narrative that I prefer in order for me to give it the thumbs up and, you know, be a part of my life. It's just dangerous and very bad thinking.
Yes.
Trophy Scene says, I get it. A POC would be upset about this, but mainly a black person. No time before about 1950 would have been good or safe for them. And that truth hurts.
Yeah. And it's just allow for the context of the situation. I, as a biracial person, can look at virtually any decade ever. And if you actually asked me to find something good about that decade that I would long for, feel nostalgia for, I could give you an answer. And the fact that that is the case should throw out a lot of the offense that people are feeling. It's very reminiscent of when Trump first came out with his campaign slogan of Make America Great Again, how people said that that was like a dog whistle for white supremacy and neo-Nazism, because what time was America ever great for somebody who's black or POC or all these different things? It's like, hold on, wait a minute. I can point out many great things about American history that have nothing to do with things like slavery or wars that were happening at the time or transgressions of the U.S. government. And we should be able to talk about bringing those great things back and maybe reiterating them as far as our present moment without bringing the horrible things that came with them, do you know? So I can look at the 1960s and be like, oh, you know what? We had, the families were staying together. Mom and dad were staying together and they were having kids and they were living in the same household till those kids grew up and the divorce rates were lower. I would love to make that great again. And then somebody go, well, at the time they had Jim Crow, so you're gonna have to bring the Jim Crow laws back with it. It doesn't make sense. It's just people being sensitive for the sake of being sensitive and not allowing for analysis on something that would so clearly be cleared up if you just gave somebody time to do it.
Sir, this is a Wendy's. Why are you bringing segregation back into this conversation? Right. I was just talking about families and wholesomeness. Oh, dear. Okay. Hobbity Bobbity says Swifties were mad because fans think her 1975 ex, Maddie Healy, is racist. So it's ironic that she's saying, but without the racist, when she dated a racist. He's not racist, by the way. I ship them.
Yeah, I don't know that I ship them necessarily. but that's just because I'm not a huge fan of Taylor Swift. But it's weird. I think that obviously is a big part of it. They think that he's racist, and I think that's not... It's very clearly not the case. It's just so interesting, given his background, her background. We all know most people are not racist. And the fact that we're acting like that's not the reality these days, that most people are not racist, most people are not neo-Nazis. And the amount of people who get accused of being neo-Nazis is incredible when you take into account the fact that most people are not racist or neo-Nazis.
Oh, yes. Gilbert says, hey, Amel and Taylor, just started responding to the Swift backlash about to reference lady in parentheses, antebellum. And then you guys started seeming to talk about it. The left is always looking to pounce. No one is safe.
Yeah. What is the band? Lady Antebellum is no longer called Lady Antebellum. Is it just called Lady A now? Because.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which. Why do
like the Dixie Chicks are the chicks?
Yeah, the Dixie Chicks are now the chicks. Lady Antebellum is now Lady A because they cowered to a group of 10 people who raised their hands and said, the name of your band is offensive, even though it's not. It's okay to have references to the Antebellum South and to Dixie and also not be racist at the same time.
Brian Bledsoe says, if Taylor Swift wants to balance out her intersectional status, become a one-legged Hindi lesbian.
Well, yeah, I guess she could stack up a bunch of other identities. I don't know what, I mean, logically, like if we really wanted to make a convincing intersectional argument for Taylor, she'd have to like come out as gay or trans or something. And that would help, I think, dial down the controversy. I honestly think this could be studied and tested. You could have a celebrity actually try to lower the amount of hate they're getting by changing their identity and see how successful they are. I guarantee they'd be successful. So.
Not even gay, just non-binary, because that doesn't even really mean anything.
Oh, yeah.
And then just identify as that, and everyone just has 100%. To respect that.
Like, what did Sam Smith say? He said he came out after he put out one of his big albums, because he was on Ellen, and he said, the reason I came out after this is because I didn't want to seem like I was coming out to generate more success for my album, which you would think in the modern day with his worldview coming out would create a negative response. But he knew that coming out before his album would create more intrigue and more sales and more support. So quiet part is being said out loud.
Indeed. Tanny just sends a super chat. No message. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Six Rainin says, first live, thanks for all you guys cover. Love y'all.
Thank you, first timer.
Love it. Kaylin Elizabeth says, Taylor Swift actually calls out the woke mob in her song, But Daddy, I Love Him, song about Maddie Healy. She calls them vipers dressed in empath's clothing.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. Yeah, I did see some tweet that said that there was quite a few songs about him in their relationship and people coming after them. And yeah, it's very interesting to just read on the behind the scenes of people's interest and stuff. Like I said, I watched a bunch of people who were like listening to the Taylor album on TikTok or whatever, and they're like freaking out at all the different lyrics that reference him or reference all these other people. I don't know if I'm invested enough to actually look into all of that, but it's interesting.
Viper's dressed in empath's clothing, though. That's like, that's some poetic kind of higher brow language. I'll give a little nod to that. I don't hate it. Now it's done in a self-referential song about an ex, so you know, there's a little balance there, I guess. But you know, I'm here for it a little bit.
I'm here for it.
What about this? Sends a super chat and just says nothing is free. I wonder if that's about the Ozempic face or something else that we talked about.
Nothing is free. What did we talk about first?
Or maybe it's just an enigmatic statement for its
maybe
own.
It is. Maybe nothing. I mean, that it's you'd true. Be correct. Nothing is. It's true. Nothing's free. Oh, maybe it's the Watcher. The Watcher content. I think it's about the Watcher controversy. Nothing is free. Yeah. Well, no. Technically, you're spending your time, plus there's ads on the Watcher content, so nothing is technically given to you for free. Mm-hmm. There's always
you're
a trade-off
with your attention to ads.
Mm-hmm.
Gilbert again says, hi Gilbert again, had to drop by one more time after Amala sang that little ditty. I heard your song recently, didn't know you sang like that. Def need more music from you. You really do have a gift.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to do more eventually on this channel. Y'all know I'm a theater kid. I'm a theater kid through and through. I've been like blasting the Into the Woods musical soundtrack in my time off. I was at the gym the other day. And I'm just listening to show tunes in my ears whilst working out. It's either show tunes or hip hop, and you guys already know that. So I feel like people would not imagine what I'm listening to in in my headphones at the gym. I need to start doing a series of what I listen to at the gym, because it's like solemn Broadway show tunes.
I relate to that. Look, I've listened, you know me, I listen to like history podcasts and stuff while I'm working out. But recently I got on a kick of lo-fi bossa nova. And lo-fi, it's
bossa
like,
nova. I like chill, bossa nova.
You know, like, yeah, bossa nova slaps, but doing it like a lo-fi version. It's definitely more chill than you'd want for like hypey gym music. But first thing in the morning, sometimes I'm there, I'm like, I'm not looking to have someone scream in my ears.
Exactly.
Just get me in the zone. Get me in a little flow.
Exactly. You never know. It's always different.
I'd be curious to like see just if you could like have, you know, AI vision or whatever, and just see what everyone's listening to at the gym while you're in there.
Oh yeah, I know. That'd be nuts. I feel like it's a lot of like hip hop and heavy metal. That's what I feel like.
That's probably the most common.
Typical.
Drop what y'all listen to at the gym.
Yeah.
In the chat, because we know y'all in the gym and not taking Ozempic.
Exactly. We know you guys are looks maxing.
Yes, indeed. Let's see. Halula says, I love telling jokes. I hope this makes you laugh. So I have to say, I'm really worried for the calendar because its days are numbered.
Wow. Do I have a button for that? Oh, great one. We appreciate that.
I love the dad jokes.
Yes, right? Taylor does. Especially that. Appreciate dad jokes.
William Joyce says, so I wrote this poem the other day about the subject of race based on true events. It keeps getting flagged by all the AI. Can I share?
You should be able to share in the comments down below. Drop them in the YouTube comments. I wonder why we'd be getting flagged.
William, we're encouraging artistry and creativity.
We are always
bracketed by ideology. So.
Yes.
Maui again says, also I'm off topic, but you should totally check out this banger rap cover by Game Boy Jones of this anime song called Bling Jones. Blang Bang. Born Bling Bang Bang Born. It's a hit.
Okay, I'm gonna look it up.
Bling Blang Bang.
I'll have to check it out. We shall see if it is good.
We shall see. Amala's, you know, a tough critic.
I am a tough critic, especially of rap music.
She's not gonna pay lip service to music, especially.
I don't
rap.
Like it. I will tell you that I don't like it. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to the Swifties today, also as well.
Which is why I'm never going to show Amala anything creative I ever did. She's kind still, but...
Yeah, hopefully it's constructive.
It's not going to be fake. Julian Giangrande again says, does Amala like Jesse Lee Peterson?
I like him to the extent that he's entertaining. I don't endorse his messaging about like black and white people and how white people are just like better than black people and all this different stuff and beta amazing. I love the way he says amazing, and if you ever like walk past me in public or whatever, that's my catchphrase. Amazing, that's amazing. because I just love watching. I know. I wanted to create a Jesse Lee Peterson button that has amazing on it, but I just didn't have the resources to pull off such a thing. So I like him to the extent that he entertains me, and I may or may not go on Jesse Lee Peterson's show to speak to him. I just don't know how wild it's going to get, because he starts talking about how, you know, black people need to, you know, be, I don't know, this black people are always stealing and robbing and they're not educated. And
what's funny, I feel like anyone who takes a combative posture with him ends up kind of looking stupid and sort of, I don't know, like the bad person. And then I know you would just be like,
I would just be laughing
at what the heck is going on and what he says. And I think you come off much more endearing. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. And I'm sure y'all broadly agree on most things. Like, what happened to do with
there'll be
modern
stuff we
discourse.
Agree on. Yeah. We'll see. Maybe it would be funny. It would be funny at the very least.
Look at me sitting you out there. It'll be fine. Just go. We'll watch.
Just go do it.
I got my popcorn ready.
It's a side quest. Definitely.
Side quest. LooksMax, not TransMax again says, hey, if you're looking for a new show to watch, watch The Fallout Show. It's well-scripted, has mystery, good acting, and I just could not stop watching it.
I've been hearing a lot of discourse about that show. I have no idea what it is about or what it's based off of, but I
know it's based off of a video game series.
Oh, video game Fallout. Okay.
But evidently it's like the show, they did a really good job, like taking the core elements of the show, translating it into like a really compelling, the core elements of the game and the lore and translating that into a really compelling show, which they did not do with Halo, my favorite game. It's like you have so much cool lore to work with there. And then they just basically did the classic, like, what can I add as a writer and my, you know, perception
my version,
to this? Anyways, so that was a big fail, which was arguably probably a much more famous franchise than Fallout and could have had a higher success, but you know, I might check it out. Adam Lopez says, just want to celebrate getting engaged to my best friend of 7 years.
Ooh, what do we got? We have a button for that. Happy engagement. Congratulations. That is so awesome. And I saw you in the chat. You said this happened this weekend. So very, very big congratulations to you and your fiance.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah. If you guys get here early during the countdown, people hate the countdown after the fact, but during the countdown before we go live, we'll usually drop a little question or something in the chat and what y'all did this weekend or what you're up to, where you're watching from.
And I'm always reading.
And yeah, we pay
keep
attention
an eyes
to
on y'all.
And Adam said he got engaged, so we congratulated him. Celtic Blacksmith says, if I could go back in time, I'd teach myself about life maxing before Taylor... I put a trademark on life maxing and capitalized it. Before Taylor stumbled upon it. But to each their own, preach to stone or whatever.
Love it. Yeah, I know.
Wouldn't we all spend time thinking up new variations of to each their own, Celtic? Or
you must.
How long does that take you?
One must. Know.
I might need you to pull up some super chats because I just got logged out, but I can see a couple here, so I'll do one more before I get logged back in. I'm at Extro, but Mr. Grimm says, this is the first time in a while I have caught it live. I just want to say you have all given me so much joy. Thank you, and hello from New Zealand.
Oh, very cool. New Zealand. I'm so glad that you found joy in the show and that you are enjoying the content here. And I'm glad you could catch us live and have a little good time.
Yes, indeed. Okay. And then I see Gilbert says, Taylor, I'm living for your Valley Girl accent. I guess that's the first time I've busted that out on the show.
So we definitely need more of that from time to time. So bring out the Valley
Girl.
I'll
get right on that.
Totally bring out the Valley Girl. Mr. Grimm says, this is the first time. Oh, I got that one. Okay. William Joyce says, I've read that for the longest time, biracial children were forever outcasts of both races. Amala, you just reminded me of how much that doesn't seem to be the case now. Is that not hopeful? Yeah. I mean, there was definitely times in my life where I might have thought internally, oh, you know, too white for the black kids, too black for the white kids. You sort of sit in this sort of middle space as a biracial kid sometimes. And that's just from like kids' pattern recognition and you look different or you look that. I was called Oreo a lot as a kid. But all of that is so superficial in reality. And you'll find that there's not there's not really that big of a separation. There, of course, is a cultural separation that I think does exist for biracial people, just depending on which culture you are raised in, or if you get raised in both and both parents are there, and how that affects the way you communicate and move through society. But with how much people are mixing these days, biracial has its like own full population category of all the different mixes you could possibly have. So I think there's way more congruence than incongruence just in life in general. And you can like sort of section yourself off, but more often than not, everybody's doing all right. We're doing just fine.
We chilling. I'm back here, by the way.
You got it? Okay.
Yeah. Extra. Sorry, I skipped over you a second ago. You said, I'd want to go back to the pre-internet 90s. Life just seems so much easier. The internet today has more negative than positive effects, in my opinion, especially social media.
Yeah, I think about that too. Like, what is the balance between negative and positive on the internet, and how are we walking that line? And it does seem like the pre-internet 90s might have been just healthier, because just think about a drug just being dropped on society all at once, basically overnight, and how that impacts people with no like regulation whatsoever, no sort of structure of how we should be using this, what does healthy usage look like, and how that affects society in the long term. We're gonna come to find out, but yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, we had connectivity, and then shortly thereafter we had social media, and now we're layering AI on top of that. And I feel like we're only now maturing as a civilization to like understand the impacts of the connectivity aspect, mm-hmm. let alone not social. We haven't caught up on social media. That's still destroying our brains. And then now adding still. So like just the rate of technological innovation, our developmental maturity as and wisdom as like people has not kept pace with that. And yeah, that's what is certainly scary about this moment and makes you nostalgic for simpler times indeed.
Right.
Let's see. Chick Flicks podcast says, you will defend white people no matter what. You would have been, this is a great one. You would have been a literal slave in the 1830s.
Yeah. So luckily I'm not longing to go back to the 1830s, because it's not possible. These are all thought experiments that we have with ourselves. So we should be able to have nuance and talk about what are positive and negatives of a time without completely just denigrating people for having an interest in a certain time period. It's like a weird area that we live in now, that it's such a controversial statement to say something like, I would like answer the 1830s, and then specifically declare without all the racists and still be crucified for the statement that you've made. Very interesting. We are like peak sensitivity culture. I'll defend white people if white people deserve defending, if a particular white person deserves defending, but not all white people get my defense.
Laura Zunin says, Taylor said, I don't cater to all these vipers dressed in empath's clothing. God save the most judgmental creeps sanctimoniously performing soliloquies.
Whoa. I don't know. I know that was obviously Taylor's. Oh, you're saying Taylor's lyric is that? I think
yeah,
you said.
Yeah, yeah,
okay. I was like, I thought you said Taylor said that.
Yeah.
God save the most judgmental, sanctimonious creep. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, like, maybe she's clearly trying to make some sort of statement, but maybe softly make it and maybe soft launch what are her true opinions about the mobs that were coming after her during that time. But at the same time, I think in that song she talks about, oh, he makes like revolting jokes and things like that. I don't know if it's that exact same song. So she like teeters back and forth in her opinion on the matter, which is a means of remaining relatable, I would imagine. But I digress. Sure.
The challenge there, I mean, now that I liked, before I said I appreciated the like vipers and empath's clothing reference, like, oh, she's trying to sound a little more profound, but seeing all these other sanctimoniously performing soliloquies and judgmental creeps, it's like, there's a line between you know, poetically expressing yourself. Like usually poetry is like more, there's a brevity to it. It's more subtle. And this just feels almost like someone trying to use a lot of big words to sound profound, I guess. But I don't know.
It was a lot in this album.
I had to give it an actual listen and listen in context. Trust. To make a judgment. But
your guess is correct. There's a lot of that in this album. So much of that. But that's
like
okay.
Someone who feels like they're very profound, but then you're just like, this just feels like a lot of words to say something kind of simple.
And I honestly think it is a result of her dating Matty Healy. I think she took a little bit of that influence and is trying to inject that into this album, but it didn't quite hit the mark. Didn't quite hit the bullseye on that one.
And Matty Healy is someone who you'd say like does that, but in a more like they have the depth and
profound, sardonic, sarcastic, like sort of social and cultural commentary, but in a way that is very like fluid and actually and self-aware. And that when you try to do that and you fail. That's just like it's a tough. It's like someone
who's trying to in high school who's trying to sound smart on an essay. Because of a thesaurus.
That's what the vibe. That's the vibe that I got from this album. I'm going to be honest. Oh. That's the vibe.
I haven't even listened to it, but just from reading that little sample, but I don't want to make sweeping judgments based on, you know, that.
Right.
Anyways, Derek B says, speaking of Sam Smith, Mr. Menno also has a Sam Smith parody song. Check it out. Everyone needs to see his parody song.
Derek
Everyone's
loves
really
Mr.
pushing
Menno.
These parody songs.
Yeah. Mr. Menno is constantly getting his shout outs in this.
But I feel like just as a category, it's probably not your like,
Not my thing. Not my thing necessarily, but I understand why you guys like it.
But we appreciate the recommendations as always. I might like them more because I like dad jokes and satire and stuff. But, you know, let's see. Celtic Blacksmith says, honestly, I need to overstimulate myself at work to focus. So I think up to each their owns while triggering out blueprints and listening to podcasts.
There you go. Wow, that's a lot to be. Your mind must be having a lot going on. You're listening to podcasts. You're thinking of rhyming phrases all while triggering out blueprints. I don't even know what that necessarily means. You're drawing out blueprints, I imagine, and doing that all at the same time. That's a lot of thinking. It's a lot of thinking to be thinking.
Well, that's impressive. I'm like I focus better when I'm doodling and like I like to play an iPhone game while I'm listening to a podcast that's got profound thoughts going on. But I can't like do creative work while also intaking information or anything.
So. Gotcha.
Extro says 1830s just seems like a short, hard life that ends with getting dysentery.
Yeah, you know, that's something that nobody else mentioned. Like the lack of medical innovation of the time would probably be such a tough life to be leading, which is why when somebody is referencing the 1830s, I don't think we take them at the literal interpretation of wanting to live in the 1830s most of the time. Yeah, I think of like yellow fever and cholera. And when was penicillin around? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what year that came about, but these are the things that I think about.
Right. Just as a matter of sheer probabilities, you would likely not be one of the people that lives long and prospers in that era.
Exactly.
And I think Alexis is our last one here. Says the pearl clutching lyric is referring to her liberal fan base. Love you both. Also, a lot of us ex-charismatic-ish are reformed now, Taylor. JS, LOL. I don't know what the JS stands for.
But. I don't know either, but I totally get what you're saying about the pearl clutching being about the liberal fan base. I think what a lot of celebrities are going to find, and very soon in this new era of Hollywood that we enter, is that they have given way to an amount of sensitivity that they themselves cannot even uphold. And they are going to have to admit the part that they played in creating that amount of sensitivity. because Taylor Swift has been largely influential in creating this like sensitive young girl who cries over political outcomes in elections as like that's what she did. And of course, it's by virtue of her going through life and experiencing life in front of a camera. And that's not something that all of us get to experience. And of course, your most vulnerable moments where you are outraged for no reason are also going to be caught on camera, and that goes out to the world and builds an influence. But when you create a culture that is, you know, surrounding sensitivity, that sensitivity is going to come to impact you and those little girls that you like were the role model for, who now are taking on those same characteristics. They're gonna use them on you, which is like the same thing with Matty Healy in 1975. He has a lot of very left-leaning sensibilities and views and previously like thoughts about, you know, sensitivity and offense and things like that, and now it's like you create the bludgeon that later hits you in the head, essentially.
Mm-hmm. My, how the turntables.
Exactly. Exactly.
Alexa said JS means just saying. I've never seen that used as an abbreviation, but that should be obvious. My bad.
I
get what you're saying about the charismatic and reformed dichotomy there. I have sympathies to both, but don't identify as either.
Gotcha.
We did get one more from Celtic Blacksmith says, not making blueprints, fixing blueprints because engineers are stupid and leave out crucial dimensions. But yes, it's quite busy in my noodle.
Oof, yeah, I couldn't be doing that. I can tell you right now, my personality does not fit for that line of work, I don't think, especially fixing other people's mistakes and blueprints and looking over things. My goodness, that would be a lot. But guys, that's our final super chat for the day. I want to hear your thoughts in the comments down below after the stream. How'd you feel about the Taylor Swift song and her calling for the 1830s, that 1830s revival? How'd you feel about the Watcher controversy and them attempting to put their content behind a paywall, but then backing it up like a Tonka truck when things got a little too heated? Plus, Ozempic face is apparently taking over Hollywood. Let me know how you feel about that down below. As always, if you like this video, like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we're live. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern. Plus, we post videos for you guys every single day. Tomorrow's video is about Bill Maher dropping the mic on protecting children and the sexualization that they face in school, in their media, and behind the scenes as child stars. So I can't wait to talk about that, of course. Can't wait for you guys to see it. So keep an eye out. And with that, I bid you adieu, baby boo-boo. I will see you tomorrow. Bye, guys.